Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Good morning and welcome to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. My name is Dan, an alcoholic, and this is the Wellington Access Radio AA meeting on air. And I'm the chairperson for today's meeting. So let's open this meeting with a serenity prayer. And so I welcome you all to join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thank you very much. All right, I'll read the AA preamble now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And in the studio today, we have Bulls and Bears, which is an online meeting in Wellington, based in Wellington, 7:30 on a Monday night. So to access that meeting, the best thing to do is to go into aa.org.nz and find the meeting on a Monday at 7:30 and connect via Zoom. All right, it's great to have you in the studio today. What they normally do in the meeting is open with a reading from the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is called The Big Book, and they normally start with Chapter 5, How It Works. So I will read a section of that, and then we'll read some more of The Big Book as they do in their meeting. So Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people, wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he was sought. So that was a reading from Chapter 5, How It Works, from the Alcoholics Anonymous book, the big book. That's on page 58, 59 and 60. All right, then the next section that they read in the meeting is one of the Tradition 5 in the long form. So this is on page 563. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. All right, now I'm going to pass over to Brenda, who's going to read the, is it the Daily Reflection, or is it
an extract from the big book?
Oh, it's an extract she's chosen herself from the big book, and then she's going to do some sharing. All right, Brenda, over to you.
Yep, Yoda, my name's Brenda, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brenda.
The reading continues for this group. I'm just going to do an extract from the Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, 4th edition, page 417. Acceptance is the answer. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. As I said, my name's Brenda. I'm an alcoholic. I'm just going to open the sharing. I didn't understand that my inability to accept life on life's terms was one of the causes of my alcoholism. Life baffled me. I didn't understand it, and I was very, you know, out of step with the whole world. And when I picked up a drink at 14, I suddenly was in step with the rest of the world. I kind of understood how it all worked, and things changed for me. It was like magic happened, and I thought that alcohol was the answer to all my problems when I was 14. Prior to that, I just thought if the rest of the world behaved differently, did things differently, if school didn't demand I do things, if my parents weren't so demanding, my life would be okay. And like I say, when I picked up a drink, suddenly everything changed and those things weren't a problem anymore. And I, you know, proceeded to drink. I didn't ever become an alcoholic. I just drank alcoholically from the get-go, and it caused me problems from that moment on. I ended up being kicked out of school and home at 15 because of my drinking. I didn't realise it was because of my drinking at the time. I thought it was just because school was unfair and parents were unreasonable, but my behaviour, sober and drinking, was unmanageable. And it turned on me quite quickly. What I had thought was the solution to my problems was starting to cause more problems than they were solving. You know, by the time I was 18, and then I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous at 20. And it's, I just want to share that, you know, I didn't understand that the rest of the world needed to change. And it's Alcoholics Anonymous in the 12-step program that taught me that I could change and be at peace with the world and the way it worked. And, you know, that's a huge gift because, honestly, trying to change the rest of the world is really hard work. You know, you just get it in line, a few of them, and then a few step out and you've got to do it all over again, and it's exhausting. I was exhausted. You know, I arrived in AA 20 exhausted by my own attempts to survive my own life, you know. And, you know, the great gift I've got from this program is I live a sober life. You know, I don't need to drink today. That's what they said to me when they came to AA. They said, you need never drink again. And I knew they were telling me the truth, because nobody ever understood how much I needed to drink just to function, to feel okay, to feel normal. And I don't need to do that today, thanks to this program and the way of life that I've been given to live life differently. So I don't need to drink. So that's enough for me. So I'm going to pass it on.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brenda. All right. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous Meeting on Air. So we've got Bulls and Bears in here, the home group members here, and they're all pointing at each other trying to work out who's going to share next. So I'm going to choose Beryl. Beryl, would you like to share?
Thank you, Dan. Excuse me. I'm Beryl and I'm an alcoholic. And that reading is one of my favourite readings. And how it came about for me was I went to Hamna and I was introduced to what alcoholism was. I'm talking to this as if it's a person. I think this is a person, this microphone in front of me. And anyway, the reason I went to Hamna was to lose weight, have a suntan, and get a holiday away from my kids. And while I was down there, I was introduced to what alcoholism was, and I realised that I actually was an alcoholic, even though I didn't think I drank that much. It was because when I drank, I didn't know what I was going to do, and you sure as hell didn't know what I was going to do. Sometimes it was normal, sometimes it was convivial, that's the word, and then most times it was socially unacceptable. And anyway, when I came out of Hamna, I was told to go to meetings and get a sponsor. And one of the things, I'm going to digress on this, because yesterday I went to a meeting to somebody's 41st AA birthday, and that's pretty good. But the reading was on this, was acceptance. And the person who was reading it, her husband was actually in Al-Anon. And when I came out of Hamna, Robert Crawford, who was the psychiatrist down there, gave me this man's phone number and address and said, seek him out because he will help you. Okay. Anyway, I didn't, because the word beside his name was psychiatrist, and I didn't think I needed a psychiatrist. Anyway, I'm still digressing. But when I came out of Hamna, I was really confused, and I was going to meetings, and I finally got a sponsor because nobody wanted to sponsor me of the three people that I asked. And then I got this one fabulous woman who took me through the steps and everything. But I would ring this friend of mine who was instrumental in getting me into AA. He took me to my very first meeting when we were living overseas. But I sort of didn't think I fitted I didn't fit in. Anyway, and I would ring him, and this person would say to me, read page 449 in the previous big book to what we've got now, and write down 10 things that you're grateful for. And every time I read that passage of acceptance, I calmed down, and it still calms me down. Like, reading it just washes over me like a shower, really. And it's comforting, because that is, it's, I have to accept. And yesterday someone said the greatest part of acceptance is accepting the unacceptable. And that's huge, isn't it? Because there's so many things that are, like in my life, that are unacceptable. But if I don't accept them, then I've got no peace of mind because I can't change what has happened. I can learn from what has happened. And that's the same with my drinking. You know, I grew up in a violent alcoholic home and drinking was normal and violence was normal. And I never wanted to be like that. I never wanted to be like my father. And I didn't want to drink, but I started drinking at 15 and it progressed. My drinking progressed. I don't think I was an alcoholic at the beginning, but I can't actually remember back that far now these days. You know, so what's happened for me in AA is I've been around a few days and I have grown up in the program and now I am growing old in the program and I haven't had a drink for a long time, but I do think and it's a program that helps me change my thinking. So it's a marvellous program. And if you think you need it, you know, if you think you've got a problem, just look us up and join. We're a happy bunch. Okay, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thanks, Beryl. All right, this is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, and we've got bulls and bears in the studio at the moment, which is great. Now, Beryl mentioned getting in touch with AA. Now, a good way to do that is we're all online now, most of us. So aa.org.nz is the website in New Zealand. And on that website, if I go onto it on my phone, there's a button on the top that says, I need help. And you can hit that. And if you hit the left of it, it'll take you to a phone number. It might even actually ring the phone number for you. I'm not going to press it just in case it rings. But there's a phone line, a free phone line, which has a sober alcoholic at the end of the line. And it's a nationwide one in New Zealand. And so if you're curious about AA, how it works, what happens at a meeting, how to get there, what's expected of you, that sort of thing, what it's like to be sober for, you know, days, weeks, months, then you can ring that number. And that phone number is 0800 229 6757. So there's two ways to get in touch with AA straight away, aa.org.nz and the phone number 0800 229 6757. Which in the old days when you used to be able to use letters for numbers, 0800 AA works for those people that remember those days. All right. Well, let's pass on to the next person to share now. And so we've got Joe. Joe, would you like to share?
Kia ora. Thanks, Dan. Yeah, hi, I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic. And it's always lovely to be here, always lovely to be in a meeting surrounded by these smiling, happy friends. Certainly not what it was like at the end of my drinking. Although that's kind of irrelevant, because even if I had have been surrounded by, you know, joyous, serene people, I was miserable on the inside. I was so miserable on the inside that I seriously considered killing myself many times. Things didn't look that bad on the outside for me. I had been travelling for a long time. You know, I'd done a lot of what we call in AA geographical cures, you know, thinking, oh, I'll run away to this place, I'll get a new job, I'll change my life and things will be better. And I did that many, many times. And you know what? Things didn't get better because every time I ran away, I took myself and my own head with me and I behaved in the same way. And I remember at about age 20 being in a similar situation again, kind of having run away to somewhere new where people didn't know me very well. And things were starting to go bad again in this place. And I think I'd only been in this place for about 2 or 3 months. And already I could see the pattern starting to repeat. And I had this moment of clarity, like all these things keep happening to me. Why is it? And realizing that I was the common denominator, and so it must be something to do with me. It must be my problem. It took me another 6 years to realize that part of me that was the problem was the way I was drinking and using drugs. And then when I eventually made that realization, I toyed for a very long time with the idea of trying a psychiatric solution rather than AA, which I knew worked. I'd seen people in AA get sober and get well and happy. And it was a torturous decision and I was absolutely nuts. I was crazy. And so I would go out on the street and I would hear messages and see things and I'd kind of be a bit like a flag in the wind. I'd blow one way. It was, oh, that must be a sign. It means that I'm meant to take psychiatric drugs. And then I'd overhear something else and it would be like, oh, no, that's another sign. It must mean that I'm meant to stop drinking. Anyway, it was all very, very horrible. And as I said, on the outside, things still looked kind of okay for me. I was just barely hanging on to a job. It's a sure thing that I would have lost it probably within the next month. But I was still hanging on to the job. I looked okay. You know, people didn't know that I wasn't really taking care of my personal hygiene. Well, I don't think they did anyway. And, you know, I looked like I was doing all right in life. But I knew I wasn't. I absolutely knew I wasn't. And so I phoned someone. I was living overseas at the time. I phoned someone. And that person was in the fellowship, living their best life, knew all the stuff, and they talked to me about what AA was and what alcoholism was, and a few things they said to me that really made a difference. The first was alcoholism is not about how much you drink. Because I knew that there were other people around me that drank more than me. I wasn't getting drunk on a daily basis at that stage. I'd started drinking a little bit most days, but I was really only getting super drunk and chaotic in the weekends. But he said to me, it's not about how much you drink, it's about what happens to you when you drink. And I knew that that was, you know, as someone else was saying, that was unpredictable, you know. I couldn't guarantee what would happen to me when I drank. And I knew that oftentimes when I drank, really bad things happened and I wanted them to stop. So yes, needing to put down the first drink in order to avoid those consequences. And then the other things he shared with me were the steps. He read through the steps from 1 to 12, like we heard Dan read at the beginning of the meeting. And I heard in particular steps 4 and 5, which are about admitting our wrongs. And then steps 8 and 9, which are about recognizing all the people we need to make amends to and starting to make amends to them. And I just knew, I heard those two parts of the steps and I intuitively knew that those things would help the way I felt on a daily basis because I would be relieved. I had so much guilt and shame and remorse for the way I'd behaved in my life up until that point that I simply couldn't go on. And so being relieved and lifted of those burdens, I could tell was, I mean, I yearned for it when I heard those steps and I wanted to do that. And then the other thing he shared with me was something that we read at the end of our meeting, each meeting, which is the promises. And I heard the promises and, I mean, I was excited and I knew I wanted that. I wanted that for my life. Unfortunately, I did not, you know, hear all those things, get off that phone conversation and run along to an AA meeting and get better really quickly. As I said, my mind was kind of crazy and I was still considering psychiatric solutions. So it took me another few months before I really wanted it and was desperate enough. And after those few months, I realised that I couldn't keep going where I was going and I was going to have to, you know, run away again. But this time it was running back home to get a fresh start in a sober way. Now, again, I wish it had have gone like that. What actually happened was I ran away back home to New Zealand. I started doing AA, doing the steps, and that lasted for about 9 months. And then I picked up again because I wasn't taking it very seriously, you know. I thought the people in AA were, first of all, they were all old. I was 26 at that stage. They weren't all old at all, but lots of them were. And I didn't think they were cool enough. I don't know what I wanted, but anyway, they weren't cool enough for me. And so eventually I started playing around a little bit. I started I used party drugs, legal party drugs. That was the first thing I did, and that was a total just mental torture. It was awful. And then a few months later I started smoking pot again, and then I drank again. But when I came back into the fellowship, my sponsor said to me, it hadn't gone that badly. I think I was trying to control it still. So I wasn't enjoying it because I was doing it and feeling bad at the same time. And so it hadn't turned out really, really bad. And so I was like, well, maybe I could still do this. And my sponsor said to me, look, Joe, if you want to keep drinking, if you want to pick up again, that's great. Be my guest. Go out there and give it a go. See if you can do controlled drinking and still be okay with your life. And I was absolutely terrified. I was terrified of what would happen if I really let loose. And it was at that moment I knew that, well, that's not a normal reaction, to be so scared of drinking. And so I put it down properly. I came back into AA and I did the things that people had suggested to me the first time but that I hadn't done. So I'd had a sponsor, but we weren't working the steps together. We weren't doing any actual spiritual work. When I came back in the program, I said to her, look, I want to keep working with you and I want to do the steps. And we started meeting on an almost weekly basis and reading through the big book together and doing the steps. And I got a home group, seriously. I hadn't really been willing to get involved in AA until that point, but I got a home group. I took up a service position. So at the beginning, it was something really easy, like I was the coffee and tea maker, or I was cleaning the cups and things, but I got involved in my group. And then 6 months in, I took up the position of secretary of the group. So I held the keys to the meeting room. And I've got to be honest, I think I was the worst secretary ever of that group. It was Bulls and Bears back in the day when we had a physical meeting room. I forgot to take the keys twice, I think, or lost them. Anyway, I wasn't a great secretary, but it didn't matter. I was trying, and people were so loving and tolerant and always made it work. And that got me really involved in AA. And then I started doing other service, which is really, you know, I was a very awkward person. And so meetings were, you know, they were okay while I was in the meeting, but I would generally arrive late or just on time, and I would normally leave right at the very end. Now, when I got involved in service, I couldn't do that. And so I had to start being okay with, you know, forming normal social relationships with other people. And that was what helped me in the rest of my life as well. You know, I was able to start living in community with others in a way I hadn't up until that point. So, yes, service was amazing for me. It was really, and it continues to be a bedrock of my sobriety, although I don't do it in the same way as I did back then because my life circumstances are very changed. The gifts of sobriety. So that was a while ago for me, and I continue to come to meetings and I continue to get a lot of joy from participating in my own recovery. It is not all doom and gloom. I thought that when I arrived here. I can remember sitting at a friend's party the first time I tried to get sober, about 6 months into that sobriety, looking at all the other people around me drinking, and I wasn't very, you know, well at the time. I wasn't emotionally sober, looking at them and thinking, oh my God, they're all having fun and here I am, I'm such a sad sack, and thinking to myself, oh well, if that's going to be it, I guess that's going to be it, because I am a bit of a sad sack, but at least my life isn't as bad as it was before I got sober. And thank God that's not true, because I inevitably would have got drunk again if it were always going to be like that. But I've had so much fun in my life. I've had many, many gifts of sobriety. I have a family of my own now, which definitely wasn't ever going to happen. You know, my relationships were all kind of, you know, I go out one night, wake up the next morning and, oh, there's someone else in my bed, or I'm in someone else's bed. Great. All right, that's it. We're in a relationship. You know. But now I have a loving, stable relationship with a family of my own. I love my family of nurture. Again, I used to kind of keep them away from me for many years. And the greatest gift, really, though, is this acceptance thing, that I'm okay And mainly, I'm okay with myself and I can be a good friend to myself today, whereas I used to hate myself and be miserable. So that is me. As I said, it's a joy to be here, and thank you so much, Dan, for having us all in the room today.
Wonderful, Jo. Thank you very much. All right, well, this is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, and you're listening to Bulls and Bears live in the studio, which is great. Now, this show, AA on Air, is available on podcast as well. You may already be listening to it on a podcast. And so wherever you get your podcasts, it'll be there, I'm pretty sure. I know it's definitely on Spotify, and it's on iTunes as well. So feel free to look it up, AA Meeting on Air, I think it's called, Alcoholics Anonymous Meeting on Air. And, yeah, so you can find us and find past episodes where there's lots of different stories of alcoholics getting sober and living a life of recovery, which is wonderful. And I'll just reiterate how to get in touch with us again, because it's always a good way to bridge the gap between sharers. So aa.org.nz is the website, and there's lots of information on there about AA, about where the meetings are. There's a search function that you can find a meeting anywhere in the country. You can look for meetings morning, afternoon, and evening. And also search for online meetings. There's more and more meetings that are popping up that are online on using Zoom. So it means you can just join a meeting from your home or from wherever you are using your phone or laptop, which is fantastic. So that's, you know, technology in action. All right, well, let's move on to the next person to share. So Peter, would you like to share?
Hi, thanks, Dan. My name's Peter and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Peter.
As a kid, I was angry, I was frustrated, I didn't feel like I fitted in. And the perception that people had of me was probably different from the perception that I had of myself. So I thought I was awkward. And I'd had a whole lot of other issues that had happened to me, which probably had reinforced that sense of, you know, the fact that I was just a misfit. And then at 15, I had my first encounter with booze, and it was like a love at first sight. I felt a relief that was just indescribable. And I think I spent the rest of my drinking career chasing that first night of euphoria. That started the beginning of my journey, and I was 15, and basically school work became basically something that I didn't really want to do. I became rebellious, and you know, so add the rebellion to the anger, and put in a dose of drinking, and I was a cock case waiting to happen. I was fortunate, depending on how you regard that. But I played a lot of golf. I played with adults, and they treated us as if we were adults. So we were able to drink all the way through 15, 16, 17, until I left school. So by the time I left school, I'd established a pattern of drinking heavily, two, often three, sometimes four times a week, out at the golf club. And I knew that things weren't going well, and I knew that I was sort of, you know, a bit of a misfit, and I knew that I was angry and my behaviour was unacceptable. But I thought that when I left school and when I moved away from the town that I'd lived in, that it would all change. And I left home and glad to get away from all the stupid bastards that had bloody cocked up my life. And within a month I'd been kicked out of the hostel that I was in. And I think I had about 13 different places that I stayed at in the first year of living away from home. And so the only common denominator during that first year was that I was drinking heavily, and that was almost like my refuge. I was able to work because I was working, and I was able to study because I enjoyed the study that I was doing, and I was actually reasonably good at it. So I didn't spend a lot of time, but I enjoyed it. So I managed to get qualified, and I was also good at my job, and so I got quite good jobs as well. So on the face of it, I couldn't understand how that sort of contrast between doing well professionally and earning a good income, how that could be correlated with the chaos that happened to me when I drank. So it was almost like living two lives. When I was about 21, I took a hostage. I got married, and that was an accelerant for me because I went from having one salary, and then I got qualified about the same time, and my wife also got qualified, so we had about four times more income than. We had about four times more income than I had had when I was drinking on my own, and basically I could just drink with gay abandon. I didn't have any restraints. I knew that there was something different about my drinking because most of the people that I was drinking with were getting married, having kids, acting responsibly, and not carrying on the behaviour that I had done. After about 5 years of marriage, all I wanted to do was to leave my family behind. I wanted to go and get a flat on my own because I was sure that most of the problems in my life were related to the fact that either it was my boss, who I thought was a prick, it was my wife, who I thought was a nagger, and it was the responsibility of kids, which I saw as just a, you know, a noose around my neck. And I was sure that somewhere along the line, if I just had a one-bedroom flat on my own, then everybody would be happier. My boss would be happier, my wife would be happier, and I'd be happier. Anyway, I had an uncle come to stay with me, and he took me aside, and he was in recovery from alcoholism, and he gave me an earful, told me what a little prick I was and how I was screwing up my life and da-di-da-di-da. Told me his story, and I thought, what a rude bastard, that this is a guy who was staying in my house and he had the bloody cheek to tell me you know, how bad my life was and how I was screwing it up and all the rest of it. But he basically started, he troubled me because I knew that what he was saying was right. And then about 6 months later, when my life was completely unravelling, I didn't mean to come into AA. I was actually, I'd gotten myself into trouble and I was looking for an excuse to get out of it. And so I said to my wife, I think I've got a problem with the booze. Not really believing that or really actually wanting any help. It was just a really good way of getting out of a sticky situation. And what I didn't know was that my wife had been talking to people in Al-Anon, which is the program for partners and families. And she had been coached as to what to do and to wait to hear that those very words come out of my mouth, not realising that I didn't mean them. And anyway, I was carted off to see somebody in the morning, a counsellor, and I thought to myself, oh, you know, like I was good. I was a good salesperson. I was a good talker, and I thought I could talk my way around this, and it would be a short chat. And I would go back to the office and life would carry on, but I would have discharged the obligation, which is to go and see somebody. And I met this guy, and he had my number, and he was one of us. He had been an alcoholic, he was in recovery, and he was a counsellor, and he played me like a fiddle. He knew exactly where I was coming from, and I knew where he was coming from, and he'd done it with a lot more people than I had. And he called me, and I didn't know where to go. And I was really, and I remember thinking, like, you prick, I mean, like, you know, how can I get around you? And anyway, but he held me to account, and he got me to see, and I knew that he knew where I was at. And I don't know how you explain that, but I had a real sense that he actually got me. And I cried. I cried for about an hour. And I hadn't cried. I wasn't the person that cried. That just wasn't what I did. If you cry, then you're losing control, and that wasn't going to happen for me. And anyway, that was really, you know, years of grief and anguish and lack of acceptance and all those things all came pouring out in the session. Cutting a long story short, I went down to Hamner, very, very grateful for the experience. I learnt a lot about the program. I learned a lot about what constitutes alcoholism and what it is and isn't, et cetera, et cetera. What I didn't fully appreciate and embrace was that stopping drinking is the beginning of the journey. The real trick is to actually change how I lived. And the other thing I really struggled with is that I was 28 and I was, I was a professional, I was good at my job, I think I was earning quite a good salary. And how could I be an alcoholic? And I had to go back and remember that the things that define an alcoholic, the things that make me different from other people, aren't about how far along the journey I am. And they're not about, as Joe was saying, it's not about how much I drank, and it's not about what I drank, it's about what happened to me and why I drank. But there were some other things that, so one is that when I started, I couldn't stop. And it's that simple. I would promise my wife that I would be home at 6 o'clock and I'd get home at 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And that would generally because everywhere that I was wanting to go had closed. The second thing is that I had a tolerance for alcohol that was higher. I could drink more booze than others, and I didn't quite know why that was. And initially I was quite proud of it, about the only sensible achievement I thought I'd had in my life. I think the third thing was that I had a sense of relief that was different, not the conviviality. This was like a deep sense of relief and release when I drank. The other thing was that is that I had blankouts, and I had blankouts, didn't really know what they were, but I would wake up on a Saturday morning and I would not know where I'd been, whether the car was downstairs, and I had been operating, I'd been out drinking and I'd been with people and chatting and doing all those other things, but in the morning I couldn't remember where I'd been, who I'd been with and what I'd done. And I could remember it up to a point, but then there would be this blankout phase. And my wife just doesn't relate to that because she doesn't have a problem with alcohol, but alcoholics do. I think that the other thing was that is that my behaviour became irresponsible. I did ridiculous things, and probably the other thing was that I had a negative attitude. Everything in life was wrong. I had a year when things were really, really tough, and then I realised that if I wanted the recovery that people that around me had, then I had to do what they were doing, and that was to work the steps. So I'd done the first step, but I hadn't actually worked the program and I wasn't living the program. I've been sober for a long time, and it's the commitment to working the program on a daily basis. It's the willingness to accept. It's the willingness to help other people. And all these things that I didn't want to do when I was drinking, which have become a part of my life, they're the things and they're the reasons why I keep coming back to meetings. I don't come back to meetings to stop drinking. I've passed that. I come back to meetings because it gives me a quality of life that was beyond my wildest dreams. Thanks.
Thanks, Peter. All right, this has been Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Now, we're about to close the meeting, so I'm going to hand over to Joe to read the promises from the AA Big Book.
Kaupai, thank you, Dan. We read the promises from page 83 to 84 of the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous each week. These promises come at about step 9, so at the point where we are going about making amends and relieving ourselves of all that guilt and shame I was talking about. So the promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. we will suddenly realise that God is doing for us what we could.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.